Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record.
The last show of the year.
No, say it isn't so, Rexy. Say it isn't so.
You cannot extend the clock. I'm sorry, not here.
You disappointed so many people when you added of the year. The period after the last show would have served a lot of people well.
That's it. Welcome to The Media Project. Dr. Alan Chartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, professor extraordinaire, emeritus.
And Tom.
Emeritum, yes, actually.
Emeritum for those people who have heartburn.
Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, sir.
Publisher emeritus.
Emeritus.
Yes, thank you.
Yes,
or indeed. Tom, if you have heartburn. Oh, I heard, just where did I hear that?
And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, still standing after all these years. Here we are. You know, it does seem to me that it's a good opportunity for us to just take a look back. For some people who will hear this show at the very beginning of a new year, elsewhere in the country where they're hearing this program, but in the capital region of New York and the surrounding several states here where this program originates, it probably is good for us to look back at some of the key events, both journalistically and in terms of the news that we cover. What do you think was the big story of the year? If you had to say, what's the biggest story of the year?
Ira, you're the guest.
Oh, I think that this is a very interesting year from this standpoint. I could name three stories off the top of my head that are not only contenders for the biggest story of this year, but I think these are three stories that are going to be significant stories in the history of the country. And that's not always so, because there are often years where a singular event is a big story. I think, and you can choose any one of the three you want, but the Edward Snowden story and the whole implication on spying and privacy in this country and what may happen as a result, the entire Obamacare issue and the impact of that favorably or not favorably over the long haul. And then the third, which to be honest, is not as much interest to me because it's not my religion, but the new pope and what he brings to the table and how that may change the church view of the world. Any of those three stories could be chosen as the top one. And as I say, I think all three are going to be keepers for generations.
Nevertheless, Rexy, if you took a look at today's tabloids and yesterday's tabloids, the biggest story of the year might be Elliot Spitzer's new girlfriend, which I say, God bless him, you know. I mean, everybody has to move on in life, but she is one very attractive woman. And the Post and the Daily News said, well, we'll have some of that. And they have splashed, you know, a lot of pictures of her all over the place, and people can't seem to get enough. We had a roundtable show, and we've gotten more mail on that than any other thing we have ever talked about.
Well, you know, that really underscores an interesting point, and that is we every year have the top 10 local stories, and we're playing about one story a day. But we also had a kickoff story in which our wonderful writer Paul Grondahl explored
really
one of the big stories
writer
of the Capital Region. And, you know, the stuff that people are talking about generally did not square with what we considered to be important news stories.
Sure.
The stuff that people talked about, you know, the huge story in the Capital Region that got a lot of attention was a mom who hired a stripper for her son's 16-year-old bowling party, his birthday party.
Was that bad? Okay, joke, don't write
video,
any letters.
The video was huge, I should say, on timesunion.com. And that's the kind of thing that draws people's attention.
Wait a second, I just... Because really, yes. I know I must have been in another country while this was happening, like Greece. But maybe you could tell me what the video showed. Keep it clean.
Alan's getting excited here as we talk about this. It was actually
too old to get excited.
Actually, she was dancing. Her action took her onto the young man.
Oh, and, you mean physically?
Yes. And it was quite the sight. So it was the mom was ultimately convicted of I think endangering minors.
No.
And yes, I believe so.
In some cultures, this would have been expected.
Well, that's true, and I think that hers is one.
So the point is that story is not terribly significant in the greater scheme of things. Nevertheless, your readers believe it's the most interesting story.
Yes, but so then we have to ask, right, Ira, why these stories of sexuality and other things become so much attractive to readers and listeners than do the more complicated studies like world finance?
You have to ask why? You have to ask why. This is more interesting. You don't really mean you have to ask why.
No. I do think it's interesting. I mean,
it is interesting.
Obviously, there is the whole, you know, sexual impetus that plays into this. But also, I think part of it is our ability to grasp, no joke intended, the issue. You know, what is this mother bringing this
kid
on?
So what does that say
on
to you, then, as a frequent critic of the media and the newspapers in particular, alleging the dumbing down of society,
sure,
that this is a story that clearly is not the most significant story in most respects, yet this is the story that people are interested in and are reading,
so
and
you're
have
sell
draw
it
the most video. So what is Rex's role, what is my role or my editor's role in looking at that story and deciding how we should play that story?
No, precisely right. I mean, you know, I know where you're going with this. Obviously, the editor's charge is to sell as many newspapers and to get the stories and to get as much publicity for the paper as possible.
Wow. So
I'm not done yet.
Well,
now we have to classify what papers we're talking about. Obviously, Rex is a wonderful editor, as you have been a wonderful publisher, Ira, and you have a community sensibility that is reflected in your decisions, and you do not put, I don't believe, the picture of Elliot's new girlfriend on the front page of the paper, because that's who you guys are.
But we all go check it out, notwithstanding our decision not to play it on the front page.
No, that's right. But that's what I'm saying. There's a difference between Murdoch's approach at the POST and yours at the Albany Times Union and Ira's at the Kingston Freeman. But obviously, yours are community papers, and there are gradations of need in terms of what you expect from your editors.
What are the prospects for success for a business that doesn't give its customers what they want? If you really say, you know, the maxim of retail is the customer is always right, and you meet consumer demand in a capitalist society. So if consumers really want pictures of the young lady who is now said to be Elliot Spitzer's squeeze, who are we to say, no, we can't do that? Why shouldn't we put that? Why do we not? Can we survive if we don't?
No, I'm not the editor, so I ask you guys another question. It's very Talmudic. You know, you ask each other questions. Okay, so my question to you would be, then why don't you do it? In other words, I know you, Rexy. I know your paper. I know your publisher. You're all very solid, somber, gravitas-driven people. So you say, well, if we don't now, you're telling me that the people of Albany wouldn't buy more papers if you had L.I.S. Smith's picture on the front with that incredible stiletto heels and the shorter dress and all the rest of that. You're telling me
I missed that picture.
You're telling me that you wouldn't have more readers, which gets right back to your question, and therefore my question.
There are two answers to that, I think. First, in the short term, you might get more readers, but the long term, I think people need some judgment. Second, there is the...
Wait a second. What does that mean, need some judgment?
People in the long term will buy a product that they believe gives them the information they need, and they need to know some stuff. They need the combination of what's fun and what's important. You know, it's I've quoted, I think, on the show before, Jerry Nachman, who used to be, in fact, the editor of the New York Post 20 years ago, and he was also the news director of WCBS Channel 2 in New York City. And he said that the top of a newscast and the front page of a newspaper were the same. They had the responsibility to give people either the news that was so important that it had to be there, even if it wasn't interesting, or so interesting that it had to be there, even if it wasn't important. And so either way, you get some interesting and some important. Now, of course, the tabloids, you err on the side of...
But, you know, I've often argued that, to great consternation of many, that each nation has what we could call, if you could establish it, national character. Your papers each have a character. They do have a character. You're not about to start sexing up a Hearst right. paper in
but
Albany.
But I think it's not just the newspaper's character. I think it's the knowledge of what the market is that you're serving. The example that I always use, one of the newspapers that my company produces is the Trentonian, which is a tabloid
in
Trenton, New Jersey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That paper, for years and years and years, and to my knowledge, to this day, has what they call the page six girl.
Yeah.
And it's the scantily clad girl in a big picture on whatever page six.
They go to some hotel swimming pool, and actually it used to be a guy who actually had won the Pulitzer Prize for photography. Later in his career, went to the Trentonian, and that's what he was doing, was shooting these.
It was a fine
And I've always said that if the Daily Freeman, when I was the publisher, decided to borrow that concept and use the page six girl in our newspaper, we would sell a lot of newspapers to people who are currently not buying us. But I also believed that we would lose many of the readers who do buy us. So you have to make a determination as to who your readers are.
Do you really think that people would stop buying your newspaper if you put Liz L.I.S. Smith on the front page?
I think there would be a lot of consternation. The best answer to prove that is when we began publishing a Spanish language paper.
Yes.
We did a lot of homework about this, and we were told that part of the Spanish culture, and it's sometimes visible on the Spanish TV channels, are short skirts and low tops and buxom, B-U-X-O-M women. And we had sort of that kind of a page six girl in the Spanish paper and were received from the Spanish community, because they're the people who read it, all sorts of complaints about it.
Huh.
So what does that say? It means that in our market, that which was popular on TV was not going over well in print.
You know, I love this business that we all have about, we had all sorts of complaints. You know, I just wonder, when you add up the all sorts of complaints, how many you really got? 10?
Well, here, I'll give
five?
You two anecdotes. Yeah. Actually, the Trentonian, which he talks about. The Trentonian, back when they first started putting these page six girls or whatever page they're on in the paper, used to list on the front page, it would say, America's fastest growing daily newspaper. Well, suddenly it wasn't anymore. It seems to me that it took a spike when people said, hey, let's take a look at this. And then it became something of a laughing
stock. Yeah, and the other thing about Trenton, I mean, which was unique to many cities now in America, is that that is a two-newspaper city, a relatively small city. And the other newspaper is a more traditional broadsheet kind of newspaper. And
the Trenton Times.
And the Trentonian was, if you will, the New York Post versus the New York Times. And so that was the market that they were looking for, the feisty tabloid market, the fun read market. I mean, one of their editors got in significant trouble some years ago when there was a very serious fire at a mental institution. And they ran a headline, the wood, as it says, on the front page, and the headline was Roasted Nuts.
Now,
absolutely was terrible.
Absolutely
I believe the editor was fired. On the other hand, there was one of those things, is where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
You want us to be a feisty tabloid? Man, what kind of crazy headline is that?
But while we're on the subject, can I take a little bit of a turn here?
Something who's to say no?
Yeah, okay. thank you, Rex. That bothered me a lot. Roselle and I went to see American Hustle last night.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Did you
right.
like it?
And I liked it, and I didn't. In that, I knew the story. It's about Abscam. And, of course, I worked for a congressman as an intern, and I loved him. Loved him.
He who went to prison, I believe, for a considerable length of time for having taken money from this fake Arab sheik.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Well, I happen to think this episode was one of the most dangerous in American history, and it has never happened again, in which the FBI set up a two-way mirror and then basically had the sheik try to corrupt congressmen by offering them money. Mm-hmm. In the case of my congressman, they shoved they kept shoving the briefcase with the money in it towards my congressman, Frank Thompson Jr., and he wouldn't take it. But the guy who is portrayed in the movie as a real sleazebag took the money.
And the guy took the money.
The guy who led Thompson into the room.
Do they use Thompson's name?
No, they don't.
And you're telling me he was actually innocent? You believe he was innocent?
I truly believe he was innocent. Or I think there was a prima facie case that he was innocent, because the way that at that point America was in a hanging mood. And what happened was the sleazebag who brought Thompson into the room testified he shared the money with Thompson.
Aha.
And Thompson said it never happened. And when you watch the movie and when you read the books about this guy, he would say anything to anybody.
On the other hand, there were others in that
who took the money.
Who clearly did. You know, the fellow who put the cash into his suit pockets and then said, "Does it show?" You know, he patted down his chest and said, "Does it show?" So that nobody could see. There was John Jenrette of South Carolina,
sure,
who said, it wasn't corruption runs like blood in my veins, but it was something like that.
Okay, but Rex, here's the question.
Mm-hmm.
Who pays the FBI? And by the way, there's a media issue to this. Who pays the FBI to test each of our public officials by trying to bribe them? In fact, I happen to think that there's an implicit understanding between the Congress and the FBI that this was never going to happen again, that they weren't going to set these kinds of things.
Well, since Congress does the appropriation for the FBI, I suspect that the FBI understands where their bread is buttered.
No, I suppose that's right. But do you think, here's the point. If you look at this film, you're going to come away with an utter feeling of disgust about what happened here. But when you were reading it in the New York Times, I remember the first day I read it, you would not have known that the press was looking askance at this practice of what they were doing. Are any of us sure? I think I'm pretty sure, but are any of us sure if somebody walked in and said, "Here's $100,000, nobody will ever know about it," what you would do? Who is the FBI to do this, is my question.
Well, that's an interesting question. The media, however, in terms of the coverage.
Coverage and editorial policy.
On a day one arrest, it's very hard to get defendants to speak, A, but B, you generally assume if the government is presenting a case, you write about what the case is. Generally, you can't do a story day one saying, "Well, but Frank Thompson says that he's innocent and he probably is." If you have FBI announcing indictments of members of Congress, you write that story.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to live with what you've just said.
And I think you're not a disinterested observer. You say you love the guy.
I love the guy.
You know, well,
loved
there you
him.
Go. So you naturally, yeah. You wouldn't be on the jury, naturally, of course.
No.
Yeah.
No. And in fact,
nor covering the story.
I love them so much that because he really was a true mentor and a really wonderful guy. And by the way, anybody who dealt with him knew that. And it was a great tragedy. He told me to bring some quarters with me to the federal prison. I went to visit him down in Lexington because he had heart disease and there was a hospital there. And he said, "Bring some quarters because that's what we use in the machines."
Uh-huh.
So I went to the bank and I got $200 worth of quarters, and I put them in my pockets.
That's why you got through the metal detector.
Well, I came into the place, and he said, "Did you bring any quarters?" And I took all these quarters,
said,
and I
here's old
throwing
baggy
them
pants shark talk.
I threw them on the table, and he started to laugh till tears were coming out of his eyes.
Well, I thought you were going to ask a different question, using the motion picture industry as part of the broader media. It sounds like what you're saying to me is that they took some license, first of all, with this story.
Oh, well, the first thing they show you is a line, Ira, that says some of this actually happened.
Ah, well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The other thing is, it is being classified in the Golden Globe nominations. It was a nominated best movie of the year in the comedy and musical category.
It's ridiculous. It's not a comedy.
I mean,
at least to me, it wasn't a comedy. Yeah.
So does it play that way? I mean, it's not.
There were people in the audience who were laughing.
They were laughing.
But I have to say that to me, it was one of the real tragedies in my life to watch this kind of thing happening. And I think the movie deserves a lot of credit because when you walk out of there, you feel, what a bunch of sleazes these guys were to set this thing up.
Was J. Edgar Hoover still alive at that point?
I think he was.
Yeah.
In fact,
because a lot of this FBI business comes out of his time.
In fact, I remember being in Thompson's office one day when he picked up the phone and he was talking to somebody. And then he said a word which you can't use on the radio, but it had to do, you know, it was what we call the F word. And he said, "Take that, F J. Edgar Hoover."
Uh-huh.
As if you're, since I know you're listening
uh-huh.
to all of our conversations. Doesn't matter. What really matters is that a lot of people got hurt.
Well, but also a lot of people went to prison who should have. I mean, to be perfectly fair, you're not a disinterested observer, as I pointed out.
Yes,
crooks
you
went to prison.
You pointed it out about three times already.
Well, crooks went to prison, so you're painting a very sympathetic picture of one particular guy whom you believe was innocent and was railroaded by the FBI, and that could be.
Who's the judge who said one innocent person you know.
Well, let's close down the FBI then. You're right. So, I think that this kind of incident.
You say close down the FBI,
well,
I'm right.
You're saying
Retzi,
that
you are too.
I'm being sarcastic because you're painting a totally sympathetic picture, and I'm saying obviously you couldn't have been a journalist on this. You couldn't have covered this story.
No, but the point that I wanted to make before is you said on the first day and all that. But you're still an editorial policy, which can say in your newspaper or the New York Times or anybody else, right?
Right.
This was a bad thing that the FBI was going around testing people's integrity by trying to bribe them.
You could say that. You could say that, for example, we have said that with respect to the arrest of the Islamic pizza maker on Central Avenue in Albany, who was sent to prison in an FBI sting. Quite similarly, I would say, a man was shown a fake weapon, a fake grenade launcher by an FBI informant.
So you want to buy it.
Who was set up, and he was told, please be the middleman in this investment scheme. And there are many people who believe that that was an unfair conviction. Subsequently, the same snitch, the same guy who was working off, as they say, was trying to get out of an arrest of his own, testified in a similar case down in, I believe, in Newburgh. So this kind of thing does go on, but the people involved may or may not have been guilty.
Well, do we know what's the end of the story? In other words, as
the story is, he goes to prison, he comes out, has a heart attack, and he dies.
No, but was there subsequent media follow-up coverage to his arrest that looked into the story?
I didn't see everything that got written, but I have to say this to you, Ira. I did not personally, and I read a lot of newspapers every day, see anything that approached what I would consider to be the appropriate caution. I'm not saying to Rex he's not right. I'm not saying that we don't have to do this. But let's say you tested all of us. Everybody in life went through an integrity test, either sexual integrity or monetary integrity. What percentage of us would come out as clean as could be?
But you're not saying, therefore, that we shouldn't. Well, you are saying that there shouldn't be such a test, that we shouldn't put members of Congress to the test and say, okay, offer them a bribe and see if they take it, see how honest they are. I don't know, but that's, of course.
Also, the police departments offer them a bribe and see what happens.
Journalists, you know, how closely do you follow the rules of journalism with respect to independence and integrity?
Yeah.
Good questions. Good questions all, but the question is, does that mean that, I don't know, it just seems to me that you're making a moral judgment that law enforcement shouldn't try ferret out dishonest people.
Rexy, it never happened before that I know of with Congress, and it hasn't happened since that time, and that's a long time now.
With members of Congress, interesting. Well, in the New York State Legislature, of course, there was a member who was wired, who talked to members and by the U.S. Attorney, Preet Bharara, and so that was a case that unfolded in one of the top stories of 2013 in New York
State. It was.
You know?
And we had a senator, Senator Huntley, Shirley Huntley?
Yep.
Bring people into her house because she allegedly had a bad leg. But whether or not, you know, they admitted to what they had done as opposed to what they could do is another whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that the people who listen to this program will all have some tremendous
reactions. Well, it brings us sort of back to where I started with the NSA story and Snowden being one of the biggest stories of the year. And America has, you know, when that story first broke, there was a lot of criticism of Snowden. There is still some.
Is.
But I think it's lessened as more and more information has come out. And the debate is on again in this country as to how much we want, if at all, our government to be snooping on
us. Is why the Washington Post and the Guardian in England were both tremendously courageous, mm-hmm. I thought, in printing this stuff, because I've often said you can't have a democracy unless people know what's going on. And Snowden certainly showed us a lot that we didn't know was mm-hmm. going on.
Absolutely. Well, with that, we're going to have to say that. I agree with you, by the way. I think that was the top story of the year with all the outfall.
Top media story. Yeah.
And I would, no, top story in general.
Oh,
I think
really?
It's the biggest story of the year globally. The NSA spying and the kind of control over our lives and the all-seeing eye that George Orwell envisioned.
That's very courageous of you, Rex.
Well, amazing thing. So there you go. We're done.
It's the last program of the year.
Oh, no. Say it as though this show should be an hour.
See you next week.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained.
Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.